On October 7th, 2023, our friend Vittorio Bertocci passed away of cancer. A couple of weeks prior to that, he reached out to Jim and I asking to record an episode about an RFC that he had been working on with a plan to release it today, October 9th, 2023. To be honest, in the moment, it felt a little bit like a goodbye, and I'm glad we were able to connect one last time. The conversation you'll hear in a bit was recorded on September 23rd, 2023, and he passed away just a couple of weeks later. We are honoring his memory by releasing this episode, as we had agreed to do. Vittorio may be gone, but he will not be forgotten.
This is Identity at the Center. If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
Welcome to the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff, and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, not so bad. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. I'm looking forward to, you know, getting this episode out to everybody. I think it was a really important one, and I hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah. So just kind of kicked down the fourth wall. We just had a conversation with Vittorio Bertocci, who I'm sure most people in the industry know. We talked about the new RFC 9470. OAuth 2.0 Step Up Authentication Challenge Protocol that just got released. And he also gave us an update on where he stands from a health situation. So I'm sure people in the industry are interested to hear about that. Yeah, why don't we just get right into it? So without further ado, let me introduce Vittorio, and we'll hear that conversation next. So we've got Vittorio Bertocci. He's a principal architect at Auth0, an Okta product unit. He's been on the show a few times at this point. Welcome back to the show, Vittorio.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff and Jim. Last time, I believe it was in a suit in Vegas during some Gartner event, I believe.
It definitely was a Gartner event, that's for sure. That was a fun time. And you're working on a new thing. This is one of the conversations we're going to talk about today is around this new OAuth 2 Step Up Authentication Challenge Protocol that you have an RFC out for, RFC 9470. And we'll have a link in our show notes for people to check that out. I guess, why don't we start with the basics? What is this? What are you doing?
Absolutely. The first thing I'd like to say is that I'm no longer working on it because it is finally an official spec.
Congratulations. And,
thank you. Thank you. It took a remarkably short time because I think that we introduced the idea in May of 2022. So it's actually remarkable that it went through so well. And this spec is, I'd say, one of the typical things that I like to do. I like to look at the current situation and see things that are unaddressed. And in particular, there is this idea of a step-up authentication that is an incredibly important scenario because, of course, we observe it happening all the time. And yet, there was absolutely no standard for it. So everyone uses features of a particular platform that they want to use to achieve it, which means that there is no interoperable way to do it, which means that its usage is more limited than it should be. And so with my friend Brian Campbell, an absolute luminaire in the space of OAuth, we looked into this and we said, you know what? Why don't we formalize the simplest way to deal with this? And that's exactly what we've done. And basically, the main point is you can do step-up authentication statically. So imagine that you have an app that calls one method that is read-only and one method that is write. You can have a static table that says whenever someone asks for this particular thing, they need to do this level of authentication or this other level of authentication. And that's fine. But the reality is that things are not that simple because when at runtime you have an app that is calling something, there are information that are only available at that moment. If I'm buying something, the cost of the things that I'm buying is only available now that I'm performing the call. When I asked for the token, there was not such information. Or now you know that with AI anomaly detection, there are all these risk engine evaluation components that you can place in front of your API, and these component analyzes what you are sending. And if it decides that the risk is high, basically it can just refuse a token that on paper would be perfectly fine. So basically what we have done was we extended the error system of OAuth to add another component. So when you call an API using OAuth and the API refuses the call, they can send you this header, this HTTP header, with some extra information. So we extended this, adding the requirements that the API has in terms of authentication. So now you can send back this thing called ACR value, which is both a parameter and a claim, that basically points to one particular authentication ceremony that is known by the authorization server. So when the client attempts the call, gets back this header and the error, now they can turn around, go back to the authorization server, and include this information. So that if, for example, the requirement is that I have to do a buffer, then the authorization server will know how to do it. And the interesting part is that we are extending OAuth authorization server to accept this parameter. But this parameter already exists in OpenID Connect. I mean, you can do exactly what I just described when you're asking for an ID token. So all we did was to extend OAuth proper to support this parameter. And I'm a big pragmatist. Like, I don't like pie in the sky stuff. And the large majority, well, I cannot say it, but a big number of authorization server implementations out there are also OpenID Connect implementations. And so that means that substantially, this stuff is already there. Like, you don't have to write extra code. And the code that you have to write on the resource server, the API, to send back this error, and the code that you have to put on the client to accept and forward this request are trivial, super simple. So now you can build systems that are very sophisticated in behavior at runtime, but are incredibly easy to implement. And in fact, I know that even before this became RFC, there were a number of people that implemented the early drafts just because they needed it. And this is I'm so glad that I had the chance to see this through, because it's such an important spec. What do you think?
Vittorio, you had the podcast Identity Unlocked. It was a fantastic podcast to get into a lot of the standards. I think, you know, I listened to a lot of episodes and really enjoyed it. I also realized that sometimes that lane was going a little fast for me. So forgive me if some of my questions are very basic, but I'm trying to understand within the OAuth 2 world, it seems like, okay, we have the OAuth 2 standard, and now we have RFCs that go on top of that. At some point, will they be rolled into OAuth 3 or OAuth 2.1? How exactly, if you could very simply explain, how is that going to work?
So the general idea with OAuth is that OAuth is a framework. There is a core spec, a couple of core specs, that define the core scenarios and then define the rule of the games when you want to extend this spec. We didn't want to boil the ocean by taking everything into account. And in fact, the thing is that the new scenarios that are part of the extensions are scenarios that emerged as the industry evolved. So we couldn't have everything packed into there. So by design, technically, we could go forever with these OAuth 2.0 core and extensions. Now, a small group of, I don't know, good Samaritans, I don't know how to define them, decided to create an OAuth 2.1 version of the spec, which substantially takes some of the most fundamental extensions and the security best practices and integrate that into the OAuth 2.1. I don't think there is much talk of the OAuth 3.0 because the challenge that you have in here is also that the bigger the install base you have, the more you cannot make radical changes because you'd break stuff. In fact, there have been attempts to start from scratch, outside of Auth, but they didn't go very far because Auth works, and people keep adding stuff on it. And now it's not just a matter of techies. There are things like FAPI, the financial grade APIs, which is defined in OpenID, but is all based on Auth, which is now used officially for certifying banks and insurances and similar. So you build on top of these, and then you have to be very careful into not breaking people, especially because often we are techies and we have a bit of OCD, you know, putting the books in the bookshelf in the right height order and similar. But in fact, if you do that, and then you break the actual business scenarios, then we are not in a good place.
I think that's the part that is sometimes confusing for people, is this idea of a core framework and then the extensions. And I feel like at some point, the extensions become so popular and so prevalent. At what point do they become part of the core frameworks? I think that's always a challenge, right? Because I think you probably want to maintain compatibility, right, as much as possible going backwards. But at some point, you know, you get, you know, step up authentication. This is not a new thing, right? It's been around for a while, but now it's an actual, you know, RFC. It's an extension. It's out. People can take it, use it in a standard way, which is fantastic. Do we run the risk of, I guess, what risk do we run if we don't continue to either build extensions like that and sort of agree on the way that those methodologies work versus, yeah, it's time for a OAuth 2.1 or 3.0 or whatever it may be to push either security or interoperability forward.
Right. So here there is the formal aspect, and then there is a bit of like a readability aspect. Formally, the extensions are always incremental. So normally you don't break anything. It's only forward compatible, but never backward compatible. And the consolidation can happen for things that are absolutely obvious. Like, for example, PXI is a method for protecting the code, the authorization code. And at first, it was devised for one particular scenario. But it turned out that there are certain attacks that happen all the time. And so PXI is one of the things that is being now integrated in Auth 2.1. So now, if you want to be compliant with Auth 2.1, you must support PXI. The thing is that most implementations today do already, because it was an important requirement. The consolidation in 2.1 is a bit trying to make it easier to discover that those things exist. Because now you have like these huge graph of extensions that it's hard to navigate. So Auth 2.1 is bringing in some of the fundamentals, the things that really you shouldn't miss. But it's more of a readability thing, because in theory, even if you just keep doing extensions, everything is there.
So I think you mentioned that this started in May, I believe. Is that when this picked up?
I believe that's when it started.
Somewhere around there. But still, that's only 4 months to get it into
production. Oh, no, wait, May of 22.
Oh, 22, okay. So, all right, so a year and, but still, that's still relatively quickly, right, for something like this to move forward?
It's super, super quick, yes.
Like, why do you think that is? Like, why did this one move so much more quicker than maybe other ones?
Scope. The scope was very small. The scenario was very clear. And so there was very little controversy. The interesting part is that the controversy demonstrated that everyone thinks slightly different of what step up means. And so a lot of the work was into reaching common ground. Like, for example, the idea of step up is a misnomer, because there is no intrinsic hierarchy of methods. There might be the exact same two tokens that, depending on the mood of the API, you can accept one and not accept the other, and 1 hour later, vice versa. So you cannot say that one method is higher than the other. But in the vast majority of cases, it's usually a step up, as in the classic, I move from read-only to write. And then there are also lots of other complications, like when I get this new token, should I also hold on to the old one? And normally the answer is yes, because the new token might be specialized for that particular call, or might have like a shorter, like might be short-lived, and so the user experience would be bad. So all these considerations came to light as part of the discussion, but in the end, there was no controversy about the need for this particular thing. And also, like, the code was literally trivial. At the same time of our publication, they also published VPOP, which is an incredibly important spec, but instead it took a very long time. It took a very long time because it's complex. Basically, VPOP allow you to do sender constraint protection on the tokens, so that if someone steals a token, if they don't have the right key material, they cannot reuse it. And it's all negotiated at runtime, so you don't need it to do complicated stuff like distributing certificates. It's an incredibly important spec, which is also co-authored by Brian Campbell, which has his hands everywhere. Actually, our spec was dependent on VPOP because we had the reference in our references section to VPOP, and we couldn't go RFC until they would get an RFC number. And so it was a week in which I was refreshing every day the page to see if they actually...
That sounds to me like the equivalent of like Google searching like your own name and looking for, you know, what's the news about me today? Is you're looking for like, did this thing get passed or not?
Believe it or not, years ago, I used it to do it. Now it's pointless because there is so much auto-generated spam content that if you do that. But I occasionally do it on Slack because there will be discussions in which people mention me, but they don't mention me. And yeah, it's so useful because once you land in there and you say, ha-ha, and people sometimes don't realize we were on a public channel. And
I like the acknowledgments that you made at the end of the RFC spec, thanking the academy, the viewers at home, and the shampoo manufacturers. I thought that was really funny.
That was actually Brian's idea.
And, oh, was it? Okay.
Brian, this week, wrote a blog post about the spec and about myself and my state of health. And he wrote it on the official Ping blog, which is absolutely remarkable.
Really good.
Absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. Do you want to give an update on what's been going on with your health?
Sure. Well, the basic story is pretty simple. At the end of June, I discovered that I have pancreatic cancer, which is one of the worst kinds, with a spread to the liver and the lungs. And I started treatment. I cut my hair myself. And there's a video of Instagram that shows that I do it. It's a time lapse. It would be fun if it would not be tragic. But at the beginning of August, the cancer caused a very severe bleeding. Like I almost bled out. And I was 1 week intubated, and my organs shut down. But somehow the doctors, I am with the Virginia Mason in Seattle. They are incredible. The doctor somehow saved me. But this thing left me with 20 pounds thinner, like my muscle is gone. My kidneys restarted working very recently. And so right now I am recovering from that event. And until I'm strong enough to restart chemo. But unfortunately, in the meanwhile, what's happening is that the cancer is still ongoing because it's completely unchecked. So when people ask me, how are you? Or they see that I moved from the hospital to the house, they think like it's an improvement. And it's true, like I feel a little better every day. But I'm still, it's like if you break your arm on the Titanic, and then every day your arm feels better, but the Titanic is still going toward the iceberg. So I am in this kind of tricky situation, which as you can imagine is not fantastic. But at the same time, I have to admit that I had an incredible life. Like, I started as the 10th of 10 kids of a janitor. So as you can imagine, sleeping in six people in the same room. I started working at age 15 for covering my studies. And I did all sorts of jobs. And I would have never, ever dreamed of achieving the level of success that I got. Absolutely never. I am incredibly grateful. When I made some messages on social about my condition, I received literally thousands of messages. Thousands. And a lot of them were from people I know, old mentors I had, colleagues, and also my company, Okta, is being incredible in this. I'm being supported in ways that I'm in awe every day. But the thing that hit me was that so many of those messages were of strangers that told me how I influenced their career, some of their life choices. And they went very specific, saying I was at that conference and that session, and he said this thing, and I decided that this was going to be my career, and now I'm a director in Post X. So it's an incredible blessing to have done this. And although it's very hard to accept one's mortality, the reality is that we can walk out at any time and be hit by a bus. The only difference between me and normal people is that now I'm forced to think about my mortality every day. But in practice, there is not much difference. It's easy to say, it's harder to internalize, but I'm trying very hard. I'm doing this app from Sam Harris, one of my favorite philosophers, called Waking Up. It's a meditation app, and it's so much better than everything else I've tried. So if people are interested in mindfulness, highly recommend it.
Vittorio, I know you touched so many people. I wanted to bring up one. So I was talking with Stephen Strong, who I know you worked with at Auth0 and later Okta. And he was like, the story was very simple. It was like the first time he met you, he sat down, I guess, in the cubicle across from you. And he's like, who's this guy? I thought it was just such a cool and kind of cute story, because you guys became very good friends. And, you know, Stephen, I know, is a listener of the show, and I'm sure he'll enjoy that I brought that up.
I remember seeing you at so many conferences, and I would attend all of your talks, right, your presentations, because you had such a different way of approaching it. It was funny and it was entertaining. And I think we've modeled a little bit of this, you know, this sort of podcast sort of off of that thing. Like, yeah, you know, it's identity and access management. We can have fun still, or at least try to make it entertaining. And yeah, I think I finally, you know, worked up the courage at some point to kind of introduce myself. And, you know, your support for what we've been doing here and just the industry at large has been, I mean, just outstanding. So I don't think I can add more to that other than just, you know, it's how much you've meant to the industry. I think it's been great that you've been, you know, getting the outpouring of support that you have, you know, from folks all over the world and people who took the time to actually write things and reach out and stuff like that. It's, you know, it's a difficult situation sometimes, but, you know, being aware of it, I think, is always validating too as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you guys are doing an incredible job. I'd say that now, if you were to stop doing what you're doing, it would be a hole, and you'd see people like running around like beheaded chickens, because like you really are the spoke of the identity wheel, and your podcast is so important, and you guys do such a good job with it. I know that people absolutely love it, and I love it.
Well, we appreciate
that. A lot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We want to wrap up on a lighter note. I know that you and I, but way more you than me, let's just be very clear here, are into the VR and the AR spaces and things like that. Apple Vision Pro is coming out at some point here in the near future. what is going to be the first thing that you do with it? Because I know you're getting it, right?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think that the API would allow it, but the first thing I'd like to do it is instead of the eyes rendered on the little screen, I would do the googly eyes. So that when you move around, the googly eyes. But apart from that, I think that that thing has an enormous potential for AR. For me, like VR is fun but solipsistic. And AR is truly where you can augment the, like I think that once we have viable hardware, it's like that thing is great in terms of output. I believe that it can give the right experience, but you can't go on the bus with it. Whereas instead, I think that the augmented reality is going to be as much of a cognitive revolution as writing has been. Because like just think, you can add a layer of meaning to absolutely everything. Apart from the, like forget the privacy stuff, which of course is going to be such a huge, huge problem. But imagine everything, like you approach a machine and on top of it, there are the instructions on how to operate it, or in a simple guidance for going around, or attaching notes, think of truly augmented cognition. Like this system sees everything you have seen and saved it somewhere. And then when you see it again, at the border of your vision, there are like these older instances that you can go and refer to. Like, I'm convinced that the generation that will have access to viable hardware, plus the AI can help query this enormous amount of information that you load, they will be different. Like, they'll grow up just like the brain of people changed. You know, there was no grammar. Like, people winged it when they were talking before writing. Instead, after writing, not just the grammar, but a lot of interesting changes happened in the cognition. If you read The Shallows from, don't remember the name of the guy, that speaks about cognitive revolutions, I'm convinced that that one will be big, and our generation might not even approve. Like, imagine someone that once they take off their glasses, they are only a fraction of themselves. But on the other hand, it's kind of like when people start saying, oh, but if you Google everything, you don't learn anything. Well, but it's so convenient. And as it turns out, the generation of people that only Googles, it doesn't study in depth, they seem to be doing okay. So anyway, yes, I'm very excited about AR.
I am too. My problem with it isn't the technology itself, other than the way it looks. I just feel awkward being on the bleeding edge of things sometimes. So I remember when I first got my AirPods, I had them before like anybody else did. I got lucked out, and you know, they were very high in demand, and you know, I'm a Apple fanboy, and I remember putting them on at O'Hare Airport, and people were staring at me like, oh, he's got the Apple AirPods, you know. So it was like whispers and hushed tones and like reverence, and it made me very uncomfortable and self-conscious. And I'm thinking about strapping these, I mean, they're big, this ski mask goggle, right? Is, you know, what it looks like. And I just don't know, using it in public terrifies me right now.
Yeah,
because of the looks I know happen. I'm gonna get.
I don't think that you'll see a lot of stuff in public. You might see it in some workplaces for people that want to be bleeding edge, but while they are so big and they are such short autonomy, also I think that the apps at first will not be geared to outdoor use. It will mostly be things like place like this office. New piece of furniture in your room so that you know exactly what it will look like once you buy it. Stuff like that, probably.
Well, they're definitely playing up to like the media consumption angle, right? Being able to like watch Netflix on this certain size screen. And I travel a lot by plane. I think, oh, that would be pretty cool and nice. And then I think it's like, oh, I'm going to look like a real dork, you know, wearing these things. And I think so at some point,
I actually, years ago, brought my Oculus and used it on the plane. And they were the stairs and similar. The interesting thing is what was the first Oculus that had the pass-through so that you could see the surroundings. And I remember a flight attendant that came to me and looked at me completely convinced that I couldn't see her. And I turned to her and saying, can I help you? And she went, oh. And I wrote a blog post about the experience. And then I can't tell you how, but I've been shown that in the triage list of the Oculus, they were references to parts of my blog. And so I think I can claim that some of the features that we have now came from my blog complaining about it on the plane.
That's a good claim to fame. I'm excited about it. I think it'll be, I'm torn whether or not I'll be in the first gen or not. I know it's going to be, you know, extremely expensive for a first gen product. I think the rumor I've heard is somewhere between like $3,000 and $4,000 to start, which leads me to believe it's going to be probably more expensive, you know, past that for whatever add-ons and stuff that. But it seems like such a cool thing. And, you know, I'm sitting here in a hotel room. We're recording this. I can absolutely see a point where instead of me looking at my laptop screen, is we're doing this over AR through, and my screen is my AR glasses or whatever, you know, I'm happen to be using. That becomes the monitor for your computing life, right? Maybe it runs off of a pack like your iPhone, or, you know, in the Samsung world, they have like Dex, which is kind of like a quasi desktop type environment thing. And it's super cool and super exciting for me. And I can't wait. But at the same time, I know it's going to be interesting watching the social sort of acceptance of, oh, there goes that weirdo with the glasses again, versus,
oh, yeah,
there goes that weirdo not wearing the glasses again, you know?
Yeah, remember the glass holes.
Yep. Yeah, Google Glass. And their short commercial lifespan. I think they've taken on some use cases in the enterprise and kind of things like that.
Yeah, they tried, but I think I heard recently that they are winding that part down as well.
Mm-hmm.
Pity, like Google had really interesting stuff for VR. Like Tilt Brush is a fantastic drawing. But
Tilt Brush is great.
Disinvesting most of that stuff.
When I got my HTC Vive, which would have been the Oculus competitor at the time, Tilt Brush was the thing that I would show off to people as like, this is what this is about. Like, imagine, right? It was very much a tech demo, but there were some really talented artists doing some crazy stuff within it. And for people who aren't familiar, Tilt Brush is kind of like this if you took like Windows Paint or Microsoft Paint and turned it into a 3D scenario where you have like a brush and you can choose different styles and colors, but you paint in 3D inside of a cube. And there were some amazing things that you could do, you know, with that sort of concept. It was almost like 3D modeling, but by hand.
Oh, yeah. And now there are so many apps, including modelers, that are absolutely incredible. I wish I'd have more time. And now that I have short hair, I can actually use this thing better. Before, with all the fluff, it was always, if I use it, then my volume will go down.
Always looking at the bright side. Jim, I know you're not super into the AR, VR stuff, but what are your thoughts?
Oh, conceptually, I love it. I mean, I think as humans, we're already able to have so many more experiences than people in the past could have, especially in terms of travel. You want to go to the beach, get on an airplane, go to the beach. You want to go to the mountains. You want to go to other countries. You can do all those things. I think with VR, you could potentially go anywhere. So, you know, I think that's a really exciting thing. I think also using it for exactly the thing you brought up in terms of having meetings and things like that. I think all that's exciting. So, yeah, I love the concept.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and leave it there for this week? Vittorio, as always, thank you so much for joining us. I'll have a bunch of links in our show notes based on this conversation. So congratulations again on the RFC 9470. I'll put a link to that. I'll put a link to Brian's Ping blog posts, sort of about what's been going on. And then anything else that we mentioned, I'll dig up and put links for that as well. So thank you so much for taking the time with us. Any final thoughts as we wrap things up for this week?
Thank you so much for having me. Sorry for my short-winded voice. But as always, it's great to chat with you guys. Thank you.
We love you, Vittorio. Thank you for coming on the show again.
We're going to go ahead and leave it there. So thanks, Vittorio. Thanks, Jim. And I'm not going to do like just a normal outro. Just be like, that's it. So we'll talk with everyone in the next one.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Identity at the Center. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at identityatthecenter.com and find us on Twitter at IDAC Podcast. See you next time on Identity at the Center.